Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
November 19th, this is the third of a three-part series on Chinuch geared for fathers of children 10 and under. We're going to get to reasonable expectations this evening. Before we do that, I want to just give a few options for consequences. We spoke about last week consequences versus punishments, and I was thinking that I didn't give virtually any good examples of appropriate consequences. So just some examples. I just jotted these down after the shiur last week. For example, we can't go to the park until your room is clean. It's not a punishment. It's saying, listen, we want to go to the park. We can't go until your room is cleaned up. So if you want to go to the park, you'll clean your room. You don't want to go to the park, you won't clean your room. I mean, it's not I'm not punishing you. I'm saying this is a prerequisite for us to leave for the park. And it's up to you. If you don't want to clean your room, I'm not going to do anything to you. Just we can't go to the park. If you want to go, you want to leave. I also want to go, but you can't go unless you clean your room. So rather than make it as a punishment, well, it's because you didn't clean your room, therefore we're not going to the park. That doesn't make any sense. Why would we do that? It's not punitive. We're not trying to hurt the child for not cleaning their room. But in order to go, we have to go do this. We can't have dessert until the table is cleared off, which means everybody has to put their plates in the dishwasher. If you don't want to put your plate in the dishwasher, wait, can't have dessert because the plates aren't in the dishwasher yet. So it's just a step in that direction. It's something has to get done in order to be able to serve dessert. Another option is let's try this again. We've had this several times where a child walks into the house, let's say after school, throws their things down, starts yelling and screaming, whatever it is, you know. So sometimes we'll just, okay, let's do this all over again. Let's step outside, we'll close the door, we'll come inside. Hi, how is school? Let's start this again. Let's try it again. So we can do that. Sometimes the children will start to laugh when you do that. But it's just a way of just restarting. Just, you know, let's hit the restart button. Let's try this again. This is one people do, but they often get angry when they do it. And if this is gonna work, you have to do it without getting angry. Which is, I can't understand baby talk. I can't understand screaming. I can't understand chutzpah. You want to talk to me? So I can't understand the way you're talking to me. I don't understand those words. I don't understand words that are screamed. I don't understand words that are said with chutzpah. I don't understand words that are spoken with baby talk. The problem is that when we do that, sometimes parents get very upset about it. I can't understand screaming. Well, that doesn't help. Then you're just modeling screaming. So that works if you can maintain your composure. Say, I'm sorry, I don't understand screaming. So those are all consequences. The consequence is you want to talk to me, but I can't hear you. I'm not giving you the silent treatment. That's punitive. We don't do that to our children. But I want to listen to you, but I can't hear those words. Those words just I have trouble with words like that. It's very difficult for me to have. The way we would say to an adult is we're not having a conversation. That would be the way we'd say to an adult. So it's a similar thing with a child. I can't understand those words. So these are examples of consequences rather than punishments. Reasonable expectations. And there are a few worthwhile statements from Gedolei Torah on this particular topic. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, it is well known, used to say, there's several stories like this about him, he used to say to parents who got bent out of shape over whatever was going on, is, will this child do this at their chasana? If you don't think this child's going to do it at their chasana, then there is no need for you to get bent out of shape about it. The particular story in the biography is where a Rav Yaakov was visiting somebody, and the man, the father of the house, who was conversing with Rav Yaakov, they had put out cake on the table because Rav Yaakov was there, so they put some cake on the table. And his son, who was sitting on his lap, not Rav Yaakov, the host, whose son was sitting on his lap, the son climbed onto the table to grab the cake. So the father was embarrassed. He was just like in front of the Gadol Hadar. So Rav Yaakov told him, calm down. Right? He's not going to do that at his chasana. This is not a crisis that he climbed onto the table when he's 4 or 5 years old. It's not a crisis. It may be, even if it's not age appropriate, it's still not a crisis. So, okay, so you're a little embarrassed, but he didn't do anything that demands a response. Okay, so next time you won't put food on the table when he's in front of you like that, or you'll warn him, whatever, you'll think of something. We spoke about last week. So you won't keep the candy where the kids could reach it. We made a huge mistake with one of our children when we used to live on Yeshiva Lane, which we were in an apartment, and one day our son walked in and he's chewing on a Laffy Taffy. So he said, "Where'd you get that?" He said, "Oh, outside our neighbors, they had Laffy Taffys outside. So I took one." So we got all bent out of shape, like, stealing, how could you do that? So we said, okay, we have to make this a teachable moment. We made him go back and knock on the door and tell them that he shouldn't have done it, which was completely wrong. We were so off, right? So they left candy out in the hall. What do you expect a kid to do? There's a tub of candy sitting in the hallway, and the kid walks by. Of course he's going to take candy. It's not his fault. It's their fault. They didn't leave candy out. So it wasn't stealing. Stealing is when a kid knows that he's stealing and he steals anyway. That's stealing. Like we talked about last week with lying. This, if you back a kid into a corner and he lies, that's not lying, that you forced him into it. So here, you can't blame a child in that situation. He's not a thief. A thief is. He reaches into your pocket and takes the money out. That's a thief. Here, you put a tub of candy on the floor in the hallway. Of course he's going to take. Why shouldn't he take? So, you know, a similar type of thing. My father was once, when he came to visit me once in yeshiva, he was invited to have lunch at my Rebbe's house, Ritzi Berkowitz, and it was a weekday. It was a weekday. And it was, Kanahara, my Rebbe, has a lot of children, and his youngest 8 are all boys. The youngest one right now is in his 20s, so this is all not getting anywhere. But at that time, when my father came to visit, there were 8 little boys, and you can imagine, lunch was a zoo. It was just wild. It was wild. It was just... So my father said, he tells this story, my father still can't get over the story. He was sitting at the table, he was, you know, and my Rabbi Berkowitz was administering lunch to these rambunctious boys. And one of the boys was being particularly wild, and he had a cup of milk in front of him. And the boy was just, you know, all over the place, being wild, and my Rebbe said to him, careful with the milk, careful, watch out, and watch out, you might spill the milk, careful. He said it to him several times, watch out, watch out with the milk. And eventually, the boy, who did not calm down, knocked over the milk. So my father said he was just blown away, because my Rebbe, without any other reaction, he obviously, you know, grabbed something to wipe up the spill, picked up the cup, and said to his son, "Would you like more milk?" Okay, we're not malachim. We don't have to, right? Whether we see that we're able to do that or not, that we should want to do that. Because the point is, the child was acting his age. There was nothing weird or strange or problematic with the way he was acting. We don't want him to act that way because we're trying to run lunch. But he is a young, energetic boy, and that's what young, energetic boys do. So that he spilled the milk, don't cry over spilled milk, that he spilled the milk, it's done already, and it happened, and maybe next time, I don't know, whatever it is, give him a sippy cup, I don't know, whatever it is, but the thing is that there was no criticism, there was no punishment, there was no, okay, you can't have any more milk, would you like more milk? That's all. Well, that is an example of a reasonable expectation. Now, I recognize most of us are human beings, we can't do that. But it's something to strive for, to realize that ultimately that would be the appropriate reaction for a parent when a child of that proper age knocks over a cup of milk. That's what happens.
If a child is old enough to sit properly at meals, then would a proper reaction be, you know, as soon as you're calmed down, would you eat some more milk?
No, that could be. You could do that. You could do that, assuming that they're of that age. Listen, at the proper age, you tell the child, you know where the shmatas are, you know, clean it up. Right? You spill it, clean it up. It's not a punishment. You spilled the milk, you clean it up. You made a mess, so clean it up. I mean, it is worthwhile for every family to have shmatas available that the children can reach. And they should know. They, you know, you made a... Let's say you're not in the kitchen and the child spills something on the floor. Let them try to clean it up. So they'll clean it up. So it's going to be sticky on the floor when you walk in. But at least they cleaned it up. They should know that when you spill something, clean it up. That's what you do. That's normal. That's what a human being does. You made a mess, you clean it up. You did the best of your ability. And then tell me about it so we can make it better. We, you know, we can mop it later, whatever it is. When I was a young younger man in Neri Yisrael, so one of my rabbis, Rabbi Zinuberger, gave a chinuch chabura for fathers of young children. It was, I believe it was 5 and under, maybe 4 and under. It was young children. So he made this point, which I've been bringing up for the past couple of weeks. He made this point of chinuch versus running the home, and this is a critical distinction that every parent has to know why they're doing what they're doing. We know there's a mitzvah of chinuch. And chinuch is to train our children so that when they are older, they will develop into proper adults, well-adjusted, who are yirei shamayim, who are productive. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to raise children that they become productive and members of society, and they should be yirei shamayim and shomer Torah mitzvahs. That's what we're trying to do. The chinuch that Chazal demanded included things like how old does a child have to be before you are required to train him to sleep in the sukkah or eat in the sukkah, or to pick up a lulav and esrog, or to put on tzitzis, or to eat matzah, or to listen to shofar, or to sit through the Megillah. Whatever the mitzvah is, and there are different age levels. Learning Torah has a chinuch age. There's making brachas has a chinuch age. There's chinuch ages for everything, and it's not one size fits all. It's a range of ages because every child is a little bit different. Then there are a bunch of things that we do, rules that we have, which have nothing to do directly with chinuch. It has to do with being able to run our homes, because we have to be able to have a home that functions. And if we have a home that is hefker, without rules, then no one can function. I can't function, my wife can't function, my children can't function. No one can function. So we have to have rules. Some of those rules are obviously just rules for the house. Whatever the, you know, wipe your feet before you, if it's raining outside, take off your shoes before you walk into the carpet. That's not a chinuch issue. That is something which we have in order for our home to function properly, because we don't want to have a mess. A lot of times, parents blur the lines between chinuch and running our home. Primary example, bedtime. Bedtime is not chinuch. It is not chinuch that my child has to go to bed on time, because it's important to get a good night's sleep. It's so important. We all know how critical that is, and we know how critical, how much we're so careful to always get a very good night's sleep, because we can't function the next day when we get a good night's sleep. So our children, we have to teach them that they must get a good night's sleep, because if we don't teach it to them, then when they're older, they're not going to get a good night's sleep. Just like when we were younger, no one taught us to get a good night's sleep. That's why we don't get a good night's sleep. It's ridiculous. Going to sleep on time has nothing to do with chinuch. Going to sleep on time has everything to do with my being able to run my home, for several reasons. First of all, when I have a child who's up late, that means I have to deal with the child, and I want that time for myself, for good reasons. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not selfish. I need time to do things, and I can't do them with my kids all over the place. So I got to put them to bed, number one. Number two, when they're up late, they get cranky, and then they get whiny, and then they're more difficult to deal with. If they're in bed and asleep, then they're not cranky and they're not whiny. So it's a lot easier. Life is a lot more pleasant. Number three, if they don't get a good night's sleep, then tomorrow they're going to be cranky and whiny in the middle of the day. So why do I want them to go to sleep at 8 o'clock at night? I want them to go to sleep at 8 o'clock at night so I and my wife can function. That's the reason. There's nothing wrong with that reason. It's 100% fine to have that reason. But the problem is when I start to become a zealot over it because, oh, they're chinuch. Oh, they're going to be damaged if they don't go to sleep at 8 o'clock. They're not going to be damaged if they don't go to sleep at 8 o'clock. I'm going to be damaged if they don't go to sleep at 8 o'clock. And that is critical for a parent to make that distinction. Because when we start to believe that it's for the child, then we become these, you know, we become it becomes like this major thing. When we realize it's for ourselves, we tend to calm down about the whole thing. If the child doesn't go to sleep on time, I'm the one who's going to suffer. But it's not an issue of training my child. Just to get away from these things that we delude ourselves into thinking that they're chinuch, and it makes all the difference in the world. So going to sleep on time is the biggest offender in this area. But there are a bunch of other things like that as well. And I'm going to go through them right now. A bunch of things that people confuse between chinuch and running a home or running your life. Yes, Matt.
But what's not for me? Because I could blow up and lose it.
You're going to hear. You're going to hear the difference.
Oh, okay, fine.
The primary difference is, and this is what we've been waiting for the past couple weeks, the primary difference is rewards versus bribes. You reward for chinuch. You bribe to run your home. That's the difference. I need to run my home. I'll do whatever it takes. I don't care if I have to give him 6 lollipops. If he'll go to sleep on time, I'll do it. Right? That's not a reward. That's bribes. That's bribing the child. Because I need to run my home. Now, is it worth it? Okay, I have to decide if it's worth it or not. I don't know. Maybe it's not worth the dental bills later. I don't know. Every parent has to make their own decision on that. But that's the difference. My wife has a story where we were living in Baltimore, and one of our children, very young, was in the store, and this child, my wife saw it right away, that he was about to throw a major, major tantrum. He was losing it. You can see the signs in your child. They're going to lose it. You see it's about to happen. And when this kid threw a tantrum, boy, was it a tantrum. So she knew it. She didn't have time for it. She couldn't deal with it at that time. She couldn't deal with the tantrum. The way to deal with the tantrum, I have it on my list to talk about if we have time, but the way to deal with the tantrum is you let him scream. You got to. Just let him scream. That's it. You don't react to a tantrum. She didn't have time for that. So she knew she had to do whatever it took to keep this kid from having a tantrum. So they're in the store. It's this little grocery store with a deli and all that, and take out food and stuff like that. And he wants to open up this thing, and he wants to put his hands on that thing, and she's just letting him do whatever he wants. He says, I want to walk behind the counter. She walks behind the counter with him. The whole thing. Like, whatever it was, as the order is getting ready for Shabbos, whatever, fine. So she finally survived that. He did not throw a tantrum. They're on the way out of the store, and there was an older lady in the store, a customer, who says, as my wife is walking out, I hope his wife is as good to him as you are. Right? So my wife had a whole bunch of responses, right, that she wanted to say to that lady. Like, you know, but but the thing is, my wife wasn't being mechanach this child. There was no chinuch going on over here. This wasn't chinuch. This was survival, right? This wasn't chinuch. No one was pretending to be mechanach over here. This wasn't chinuch. She wasn't training him how to behave. She was trying to get out of that store alive. That's what she was trying to do. And making that distinction, so this one was obvious, but a lot of times we blur those lines. And when we're aware of the fact that it's for me that I'm doing it, things change. The way I handle it changes. My zealousness changes. What I'm willing to do for it changes. The whole thing, the whole attitude becomes different when I realize that it's for me and not for the child. That's the difference. So my child refuses to clean their room. So I have to make a decision over here. Why do I want this room clean? If it's for a chinuch issue, if it's chinuch, I really believe that it's important to train my child to clean their room. I question whether that's true or not, but you as a parent, you can make your own decision about that. But if you feel that it's important to train a child to clean a room, okay, so then you can set up a system of rewards if you wish. And the rewards can be commensurate to the job at hand. And the bigger job it is, it can be a bigger reward. A smaller job is lesser reward. And the rewards can be different. And it can be something which can be a long-term thing. There could be a chart with checks. And you can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you like to do as rewards in order to encourage a child for chinuch. If it is that I can't deal with this later. This room has to get cleaned up, and I have a million things on my plate, and I got it. So I need my kid to clean the room. So that's not chinuch. That's to run the house. So if you want to bribe your kid, bribe your kid. Do whatever you want. But it's not chinuch. But it's fine. So bribe him or her. That's fine. You could do that if you want. And as I brought up last week, when parents are at somebody else's house and their child makes a mess and the parents are embarrassed, that's why they're telling the child, oh, you have to clean up all the toys that you took out of the thing. The parents are embarrassed. They don't want to leave the house a mess. But it's not chinuch. It's not chinuch for your child to clean up the toys that he or she used at somebody else's house. Because there's no difference between somebody else's house and your own home. There is no difference. Why is it more of a chinuch for them to clean up the toys at my house or at your house? It's the same thing. If you're supposed to clean up, you're supposed to clean up. If you're not, you're not. If the child is not old enough to clean up all those toys, then they're not old enough. And it doesn't matter where they are, they're not old enough. Just because you're embarrassed to leave the house that way does not make it a chinuch issue. It means it's your personal embarrassment. So if you either you clean it up or if you want your child to help, so then bribe them. But don't yell at them. And don't tell them indignantly, oh, we have to clean up all our toys. Most of the time when that happens, it is not age appropriate that parents are forcing their children to clean up after playing at somebody else's home. A number of weeks ago, one of my children, my youngest child, was upset. She was upset about something, whatever it was, and she had a plate at the table. It was in the dining room. It was a Shabbos meal. She had a plate. It was a paper plate, and she was annoyed about something. And she kind of like stomped away from the table. So I said, one second. You got to take your plate off the table and put it in the garbage. So she came back and she went like this. She just grabbed the plate. Like this. Well, the plate had a bunch of little things on it, little sticky things, and went all over the carpet. So she knew she did it right away. So I said, okay, clean it up. Now, at first, I said, hey, like that, which was too much. I shouldn't have done that. But then I caught myself and I said, okay, clean it up, because I mean, yeah, she right on the floor. So she got down on the floor and cleaned up, but she was upset. She was upset. I mean, she kept her head down. She didn't want me to see that she was ready to cry, because she was upset about the whole thing, and she was upset that I was making her clean the floor. So she started getting down to clean it up. So I let her clean for maybe a minute or two, but there was no way. It was way too much for her to clean up. It was a bunch of little things all over the floor, and she's not old enough to be able to do it right. So then, after I let her do it for a minute or two, then I got down with her and started to clean with her. Because it wasn't a punishment. I didn't want her to feel like she's unloved. But she made a mess. She has to clean it up. So I started to do it. Now, at a certain point, her older sister, her teenage older sister, got down and started to help also. So I told her, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Because she has to know. She has to clean up. I don't want this to become a family affair. She has to clean up. I'm helping her so she doesn't feel like she's been punished. But she made the mess, so she has to clean it up. Now, that's age appropriate. She's 8 years old. That's age appropriate to know she has to clean up. It's not age appropriate to expect her to do a spotless job. That's not age appropriate. But that she should do something that is age appropriate for an 8-year-old. So that's what we did. That time, we handled it correctly as opposed to the time when we accused our child of stealing and becoming a common thief. Right. Bringing children to shul is a hot button issue. It's a hot button issue. If a child is brought to shul, and I am not suggesting that children should be brought to shul, but if a child is brought to shul, keep in mind there is no chinuch on bringing a child to shul unless the child can sit and daven. There is no other chinuch to bring a child to shul. There is no chinuch to bring a child to shul to sit and eat a lollipop. There is no chinuch to bring a child to shul to go to groups. There is no chinuch to bring a child to shul to be outside playing kickball. There's no such chinuch. The only chinuch in bringing a child to shul is to bring a child to shul to sit and daven with their father or with their mother or with someone who can help guide them. It's not uncommon that there is nobody to guide them, especially if mother's at home with small children. You have daughters, so it's important to find someone to help guide them or to be next to them, help them. What if they lose the place? What if they don't know where they're going to be? To help them out, you find someone to mentor them and help them out. The if a child is brought to shul, so much of the time, the reason why small children are brought to shul is because the mother doesn't want them at home. That's why the small children are brought to shul. Which, there's nothing wrong with that as long as the parents understand why the child is being brought to shul. It has nothing to do with chinuch. It has everything to do with the parents and how they run their home. That's what it has to do with. So again, the child should not be chastised for talking in shul or for making noise in shul. The child is doing what a child does. Shh, shh, shh. What kind of business is that? There's no chinuch in that. And that's cruel. That's a cruel thing to do to a child. You're putting the child in a situation where they don't know how to behave. You can't expect the child to sit quietly. Even if you ply them with candy and all kinds of sweets and whatever it is, they can't sit for so long. A child isn't able to. It's not a pleasant thing when parents do that, and it's not chinuch, and it's not nice to the child. It's not good parenting. If we're going to bring a child to shul, then a parent has to have a plan for how that's going to work. So groups is a plan. And having a child come into shul for some of the time and out of the shul for other parts of the time, whatever it is. My personal opinion is that the child needs to be supervised at all times, whether they're with the parent or whether they're in groups. There's got to be some supervision. To have the child just roaming the campus, I believe that is highly irresponsible. But that is something which I think is a bigger issue than we're going to deal with over here. I think it's a shul-wide issue, and it's probably a worldwide issue. When I was a child, I was allowed to roam the campus. It wasn't the campus, but I was allowed to roam the building. It was not very healthy, let me tell you. I guess I survived. I remember being down in the social hall. The social hall was downstairs in the shul, and I remember one time all of us realizing it would be a great game to take all the wooden hangers that were on either side of the social hall, and we would like fling them along the floor at each other and see if we could jump out of the way before the hanger would hit each other. We had like 10 boys like throwing these hangers back and forth. And at one point, the fathers came down and said, "You guys are making a huge racket. You got to stop now." And we couldn't understand. What was the problem? What was the issue? We didn't understand. Well, okay. Anyway, right. Yes?
Going back to the example you gave of the cleaning a room, you kind of alluded that wasn't chinuch.
It can be, but if it is, you got to treat it right.
So my question is like, are you making an assumption that there's some other activity in which you teach your child the difference between like entitlement and responsibility?
We'll get to responsibility. Yeah, we're going to get to that. Yeah, no, responsibility is a big thing. I agree with you 100% on responsibility. But I don't, just because there's responsibility doesn't necessarily mean that cleaning the room is within a reasonable expectation.
Right.
Because if it's a huge mess, they can't clean it.
Right.
It's too big for the kid. I mean, it's, you know.
So anytime there's a reasonable expectation that's a good expectation to have a child, it's always chinuch and not running your home?
Then it can be, if it's presented as chinuch. Then it can't be. A parent can make everything, can mess everything up, and make it not chinuch. But if it's presented as chinuch, I'm going to show you right now. Another unreasonable expectation. Children at Kiddush is an unreasonable expectation. If you bring your child to Kiddush, then your child should be able to eat whatever they see. To bring them to Kiddush and expect them to have only one candy, only one cookie, only one... They're children. They're seeing mounds of sweets. Why should they be restrained? Now, I'm not suggesting that children should be run wild. I'm suggesting don't bring them into the Kiddush. But if you bring them into the Kiddush, don't be shocked that your child wants to grab everything in sight. Of course they want to grab everything in sight. And if you're going to restrict them, all you're doing is that they're looking for an opportunity when you're not looking so that they can grab whatever they want. Because children are children, of course they want it. What else do they want? If you don't want your child to grab everything in sight, don't bring them into the Kiddush. Bring food out for them, if that's what you want. Or send somebody older in. What we used to do is send the older siblings in to bring a plate of food out for the younger ones who wouldn't be able to restrain themselves. But it's unreasonable to expect children to be standing in front of a bunch of candy and have one piece. It's not just not a reasonable thing, and it's not nice. It's a cruel thing to a child. It's not a nice thing to do. So like a kid in a candy shop, right? It's not right. So again, a reasonable expectation. My wife's this drives her bananas, and I'm going to bring it up here. A Shabbos table, kids at a Shabbos table. There are parents who spend the entire Shabbos meal arguing with their children about whether they had healthy food so that they could have dessert. If you ask my wife, the number one thing that she feels destroys children, it is this. Why? What's the point? Are we having a Shabbos meal to teach children healthy eating? That's why we're having a Shabbos meal. We're having a Shabbos meal so that children will enjoy Shabbos. That's what we're having a Shabbos meal. That's what children are at the Shabbos meal. So they'll enjoy Shabbos. They are not going to walk away enjoying Shabbos if we spend the whole time fighting with them over having good food, healthy food, so that they can have dessert. If you're serving dessert, children get dessert. Never take dessert away from the child. Just like we said the other day, that a reward never gets taken away. If it is a given in your home that dessert is served, and the adults are having dessert, then the children get dessert. If it is a given in your home, as it is in my home, that there is a Shabbos treat in the afternoon, then the children get the Shabbos treat. I don't care how they behave that day. You never take that away from the child. The child is entitled to what is normally done. You don't take away dessert, and you don't take away, and you don't take away a Shabbos treat. Wait a second. Children come to the Shabbos table full. They've eaten already. They've probably had 3 chalents already, along with everything else. They're not hungry. They don't want anything else. Don't force feed them. It's Shabbos. Don't bother. Don't bother with it. Why? Why are we doing that? Just let them do what they want. You know how many children I have that they come to the meal, they have their grape juice for Kiddush, they eat a ton of challah, run away from the table and come back for dessert? It is commonplace. It is normal. Because of course they are. Why should they? They're not interested in anything else. They've eaten already. They've had many meals. Why should they eat more? They're full. If they weren't full, trust me, they would eat. If they were hungry, if they came to the table hungry, then they would eat chalent. Then they would eat kugel. They would eat things because they're hungry. Just like during the week, they eat when they're hungry. They're not holding out for dessert because they're saying, I don't like this food, I want to eat dessert food instead. If they're hungry, they will eat the food. They're not hungry. So don't force them to eat. There's no point in that. It's not chinuch. It really isn't. There's no point in doing that. None whatsoever. If you want to teach healthy eating, so then serve different types of desserts. Or don't serve dessert. But that's table-wide. That's not just for the children. Or don't serve soda, or don't whatever it is that you want to do to have healthy eating, you can do that. But it should not be a punitive thing, and it shouldn't be this constant fight with the children over whether or not they had something so that they could have dessert. Matt, you wanted to say something?
I was just going to say, yeah, and of course, granted on the chalent at shul. Like, if they eat the chalent, that's called eating. I get that. But why can't it be a given, like you're saying, if it's a given that you have dessert, you can't withhold dessert from the children. But why can't it just be a given that people who eat the meal get dessert?
Because they're not hungry.
Let's say they are.
But they are.
They're not.
What's the point of a Kiddush?
They've had cake at the Kiddush. They're full.
They have not been to Kiddush. Time to age, they're eating dessert with so much. So, of course, they are hungry.
And they're not hungry. What do you mean? The Gemara says you can eat the plate for dessert. What are you talking about? They're not hungry. They're not hungry. I'm telling you, if they were hungry during the week, do they eat?
No.
Okay, so then why should Shabbos be different?
No.
Why should Shabbos be different?
Not different. You always have to have main.
No.
You have certain eating habits that you reinforce during the week, and then you just let them go.
Because I want my kid to keep Shabbos.
Is it okay to do it during the week?
What?
Is it okay to do that during the week?
Yeah, do what you want during the week. Don't serve dessert. I don't serve dessert during the week.
It's not about dessert. It's about making sure the kids eat.
Yeah. What do you mean making sure the kids eat? Do you force feed your kids vegetables?
Not about vegetables. I had some kids I had to calorie count on.
He didn't have breakfast. Literally ate nothing. He didn't eat anything
the day
before.
And they want to eat.
You're worried that he's not eating anything. I have a few.
If they're emaciated, you can worry about it. Most kids are not like that. Most kids are not like it. There are kids who are picky eaters. There are kids who are picky eaters. You know.
They'd rather
starve. I'm saying, do they eat the challah?
Yeah.
Okay, so challah's food. It's bread. I'm saying, don't superimpose our ridiculous notions of nutrition on a little kid. They're not old enough to understand it, and they're not developing bad eating habits. I agree with you. If you serve them candy 7 days a week, and that's all you serve them, you are making bad eating habits. If you serve them fast food all the time, you're not producing obese children. It's not happening. We don't do that. We don't serve our kids that way during the week. There's no reason why the Shabbos table should become a battle over nutrition. And I'm telling you, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. You want your kids to walk away from the Shabbos table excited and happy and looking forward to the next one. That's what you want. You do not want your kids walking away from the Shabbos table thinking, this is the worst, most terrible experience I ever had, and I wish we wouldn't have it each week. What are you gaining? There's no point. There's no point. I'm sorry to debunk it completely, but you're not going to move me on this one, and you're not going to move my wife on it at all. It is a terrible, horrible thing. It should not be done. Okay, moving on.
Right, that's exactly right. That's 2 bites.
I just want to say, I want to make it clear. I just want to say that we not with any of our children, we have never done it. We have never insisted on 2 bites, 1 bite, that, nothing. Never done that ever. We've never done it.
No. Anything, including dessert. Now what?
What? The kid won't eat. That's a different issue. That's not a chinuch. That's take him to a doctor. That's not what we're done with that. Okay. Okay. Responsibility. That is a big deal. Responsibility is a big deal. Now, responsibility works like this. We want to teach our kids responsibility, and we should. And there, that is a chinuch issue. So there, it's critical, of course, to be age appropriate. And different children, as they get older, can do more and can do less. Depends on the child. Children can be given small pieces of responsibility that they will later own. They'll become theirs. So, for example, you can start with cleaning up. You can have that this child's responsibility before Shabbos is to, like, it's on Friday, we're all getting ready for Shabbos, so this child's responsibility is to clean up this particular toy or this particular corner or something like that. But it's got to be small enough that the child can do and be proud of it. Because when you're teaching responsibility, you want your child to walk away proud of having accomplished something. And then you want to announce that. And you want to say, Mommy, look what he did. Daddy, look what she did. And at the table, you want to say, you know what little Yankala did for Shabbos? You want to build that up. You want to give them that sense of accomplishment that they have been responsible, because they will then own this. They will do it without you asking. And they will want to do more because they're excited and proud of their accomplishment. That's the way you want to teach, and you want to do that. You want to teach responsibility. Children can have responsibility, depending on the age of the child, to load the dishwasher, unload the dishwasher, clean off the table. In my home, the children are all expected, and once they get to a certain age, they are all expected to collect and fold their own laundry. The laundry is all dumped on a bed, and then the children are expected to come in and just go through the laundry, find their own pieces of clothing, and bring them into their room. Now, obviously, we're not talking about a 3-year-old, because we're talking about a child who's old enough to be able to fold laundry. But they can find their own clothing and put it away. That can be done.
How old is that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's my wife. Heck, I don't know. Right now they all do it. My youngest is 8, so I don't know what age they start, but that's the thing. Once the children get to a certain age, now this is already a teenage thing. This has nothing to do with 10 and under. But at a certain age, they're all expected to do their own laundry. No more is their mother do the laundry for them. But that's an older age. That's not 10 and under. So I'm saying, but that's a responsibility thing that you got to be responsible for your own clothing. There can be responsibility in helping with Shabbos preparation. Whatever cooking is going on, there can be small jobs that can be done by children. I don't know what the name of this thing is, but we have this chopper thing, this alligator chopper thing. You put the vegetables in and you slam the thing down, and they all get chopped. It's like I don't know if you've seen.
Grid.
Yeah, it's got a grid in it, right? Smaller children can do that. They can't cut the vegetables, but they can be given pieces of vegetables, and then they can. And they love to do it. Chop, chop, chop. And they can do that. Eventually, they'll graduate to the point where they can cut the vegetables or peel the vegetables. So that's something, it becomes their thing. I have one child who, because she was the youngest at the time, she was the youngest child who could do a chore. So the chore that she was given was tearing toilet paper for Shabbos. It's still her job. It's still her job, and she's the oldest child at home right now. It's still her job. And she can do an entire roll in under a minute. Exactly right. She had they had competitions with other girls for this, and she won a competition with this. Exactly 3 squares, exactly right. Boom, 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 right? And we make fun of her. We poke fun of her because of it. But the thing is, it became her job because she started doing it when it was the thing that she could do. She got good at it. And so she kept doing it. She owned it. and it became her job. I don't think she ever. I don't think she resents it. I think she sees it as, okay, that's what I do. That's my thing for Shabbos. I can do it. I do it for Shabbos, and it's a very needed thing. Everybody's very appreciative, and she's effective at it. So the children will own their responsibilities if it is developed in a way where they are proud of it, and it's reasonable and age appropriate, and then incrementally they can grow into it. But they're going to want to grow into it because they want to own it. It becomes theirs. It's their contribution to the family. And it's something which they're proud of, and there's no reason why that cannot be taught. So I described it with Shabbos. It could be the whole week. There are ways that you can do it. It's a little more difficult during the week only because the chores aren't necessarily as regimented. But if you have regimented chores in your house, you can do that. When I was growing up, my mother had a chart of chores that each of us children had a certain thing. Then it was a rotation. It wasn't something we each child owned one thing, but we kind of rotated around, and there were things we didn't like. Things we didn't like. Vacuuming is something which, once a child gets to a certain age, they can do vacuuming. These are things that can be done, and they can be taught those types of responsibilities. So that is chinuch. That is chinuch. It's not a mitzvah. No, it's not like eating matzah, but it is chinuch, and therefore the way to deal with that is not by bribing them, but by rewarding them. And rewards can be. It can be a candy, but it could also be acknowledgement. And acknowledging at the table, any of you who have been to my Shabbos table know that both Friday night and Shabbos day, at a certain point, my wife says, it's time to give credit. And everybody has to be quiet, and she gives credit to each of the children for what they did for Shabbos. Some of it is food preparation, but others is whatever it is. My wife writes a weekly email to the entire extended family, which she sends out about what the Branskys did this week. Ha! Look at us, right? Okay, I don't really understand the whole thing, but that's what she does. So it's a way of staying connected. So we do, and people respond, whatever it is. So my 8-year-old likes writing it. She enjoys writing it. So it's her job now. She enjoys doing it. She goes around to each member of the family. What did you do this week? What did you do this week? What did you do this week? Oh, okay. And she gets it in her head, and then she writes it. So my wife has to edit it, but she writes the week in review, and so she gets credit for that at the Shabbos table. Recently, she said that she didn't like it so much because it's not credit enough. So she still wants to do it, but she wants to do something else because she wants to have a different credit also, something that people eat. Okay, fine. So I'm saying, but it's a responsibility thing, and she now owns it, or she's actually just developing into owning it. So that's something that's the type of thing that can be done and should be done. That's training for responsibility. Okay, we're just about out of time. We're running out of time. Quickly, a few points to run through. Arguing, fighting, rivalry. Children fight with each other. It is normal. It is the way children are. I always tell this story. One time I was visiting my parents in Philadelphia, and there was a mother, a woman who I had grown up with in the shul, and she was at that time I had 5 children, and she had 2 children, and she had 2 boys, and her younger boy had just gotten old enough to fight with the older boy. So I remember it was after shul, and she's getting her kids in the stroller, and I'm getting my kids in the shul, and she says to me, "So you have 5 children?" I said, "Yes, Baruch Hashem." So she said, "And how do you get them to stop fighting?" I said to her, "Stop fighting? What would they do all day?" That's what they do. Children fight. It's normal. That's what they do. Of course we want to train our children not to fight with each other. Of course we want to do that. But bear in mind that it is normal. It is what kids do, and we're going to have limited success in that. The best you can hope for is, as we mentioned last week, you can separate children who are fighting. You can say, listen, if you can't play together, we're going to have to separate you. It's not a punishment. It's we can't have fighting going on. So we got to put you in your room. That kind of thing. Boys and girls fight differently. They fight differently. A brother with a brother will be very physical, and the girls, as they get older, will be very catty. They'll have a lot of words for each other, and it's important for a parent to monitor and make sure that no bullying is going on. And that means almost always taking the side of the younger, smaller child. That's a critical thing that parents must do to make sure no bullying is going on. But the bullying can be the reverse. It can be the reverse. The younger child can often manipulate the parent to get the, you know, to yell at or get the older child. So you got to be careful. You got to be really, really careful not to play favorites and you know, but just to keep the children, you know, as civil as possible. But the fighting is normal. It's not your family that's fighting. My family fights. When I was a kid, I fought, and that's the way it goes. It's not. Don't look at it as some kind of a chesaron in your particular children that they're fighting with each other. If they weren't fighting with each other, that would be something to think about. What is that all about? And all right, we mentioned about tantrums briefly, and just want to mention one last thing. We didn't do anything about different genders. I just want to emphasize that with daughters, so they will grow out of the stage of wanting to hug and kiss and cuddle with their parents and with their father. They'll grow out of that a lot older than the boys. The boys will grow out of that a lot younger. It'll be a lot younger that the boys want to walk away. If they don't want any of that, they don't want to hug, they don't want to kiss, they don't want to, you know, they'll get out of that a lot younger than the girls will. The girls will often like it a lot later. But it is child dependent. Some kids like it more than others. And some kids, you know, some kids grow out of it younger. It's important not to take it personally. If the children, you know, if they don't want it, they don't want it. That's some kids like it more than others, and that's all. So if they don't want it, they don't want it. So you be respectful of that. And just, you know, whatever they want. You know, with sometimes we joke with the boys and give them a good handshake. You know, okay, you know, that's what they want. But you know, don't take it personally. That children are different in those ways. I'm happy to deal with any questions if you have after Mark. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.